So we're here with our first guest, Elizabeth Block, who's the head of operation of Strix. Really excited to have you here. I think part of what's really unique about Elizabeth's story and expertise is that she is the head of operations, but prior to working with Strix, she was not doing operations at all. And for anyone who knows anything about the brand, you guys were on Shark Tank, which inevitably led to an absurd amount of probably spike in volume. So I think part of what I'd love to sort of start off here is, first and foremost, how did you get into this? Like in like sort of the abbreviated version of like, how did you get into this? What led you to doing operations? And then like, what were the resources and ways you learned along the way? And as you have gotten to scale, what are some of the things that you've incorporated into like the way that you operate or manage your business today based off of lessons learned? And we can go from there.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for having me on. Yeah. So I run operations and retail at Strix. I've been at the company for just over 2 years. In my background, I used to be a buyer at American Eagle. I ran account management and sales at a software company. And I honestly fell into this role by accident. I've known one of the co-founders for years and years and years. I'd gotten laid off from COVID. They're looking to hire somebody for their first hire. And it was a position of, we don't really know what we need, but we just need someone to figure it out and like just run the train. And I just have a really good knack of just figuring it out, whether it takes a really long time or whatever it may be. So that's how I ended up in this operations role. My title has changed a million times. I've touched all parts of the business, whether it is I've written emails, I used to write copy for social media. I would take pictures of my iPhone and try to Photoshop it and like stick it on our Instagram. I literally have done anything and everything, but now I mostly do operations and then handle all of our retail partners, which is crazy to think that I would do that in a million years. I literally got a C minus in supply chain in college. So I was like, nope, I'm definitely never touching any of that. So it's just funny where my role is. And I think it's an interesting role to be in operations, especially at a very small company. So at Strix, we're still really small. There's only four of us. There really isn't anyone to learn from. There's not really any mentors, or they just also haven't done it before. So I think that's the beauty of being able to get into a role where you don't necessarily know what you're doing because nobody else knows what they're doing. So there's no precedence. Your company's brand new. Strix is a men's skincare and cosmetics company. So we're not a new category, but we're kind of a new category since we do cater to men. We are the first men's cosmetics in Target, which also happened to roll out exact same time we were getting on Shark Tank. So it's just a lot of inventory management, and we can definitely go through that. And I think you just have to kind of sit down and figure it out, and you just have to be able to pull the plug and saying, I think this is the way we should go. You just have to do it. You'll figure it out. If you fail, you'll learn from those mistakes and go on. So I think that's probably the biggest lesson and learning that I've taken away from this position is like, at some point you can't keep talking about it. You can't keep strategies, what's ifs, buts, and all of that, that you just have to like, all right, I'm trying this. We'll figure it out along the way and just kind of go with it. And also just keep yourself really honest that if it isn't working out, just change direction really quick. So being able to be really flexible. So I think the question with Shark Tank and the influx, it's, as anyone knows, with the supply chain right now, things get stuck on boats forever. So we actually had some of our product sit on a boat for 6 weeks. It literally landed in our warehouse the day we aired on Shark Tank. So like, I did not sleep for like 2 weeks being like, is it going to come off the boat? Then you got to rush it through customs. Like, there is no amount of money you can pay to get your product off of a boat if it's stuck in the middle of the ocean. Right. You literally can't.
I've actually heard that.
So like, you're like, what do I do? And like, hope isn't a strategy. Like, you think of all those sales tactics. You can't just go and pray to some shipping god. Like, they don't exist either. So we got lucky in that sense, but you just always have to have a backup plan and just really figure out like, if we don't get the inventory, how do we handle it from that? And I think a little bit of background for people who don't really know the Shark Tank process. So we actually filmed Shark Tank in July of 2021 and we got a deal, but they won't tell you, even if you have a deal, of when you'll air until 3 weeks before you're airing. So pretty much every Friday we're sitting on our hands and knees being like, is this the day we're getting an email that 3 weeks from now we'll be on Shark Tank? So they start airing in October all the way through the end of May. So you're literally sitting like week after week for what, 6 months being like, are we going to pull the plug? Are we going to do it?
Right.
So it makes it really difficult to do any kind of planning, whether you're trying to hold inventory or not hold inventory, because 3 weeks is not enough time to get anything from your factories or your manufacturer, especially when they're overseas, or even if they're domestically, like that's still really difficult, but you don't want to hold on to too much inventory because there's a lot of missed opportunity of not being able to sell that elsewhere. And for us, we launched in Target in March. So a ton of our inventory had gone to Target. And then right after, if we were going to be on Shark Tank, we knew we had Good Morning America in June for Father's Day. So it was like, to us, that was a little bit of our safety net of if we plan all this inventory for Q2 and we don't use it, at least we know we have Good Morning America in June to kind of help offload that. And then also know we could send to Target. Worst case, we weren't necessarily worried about sitting on inventory. I think our biggest struggle and what we kind of had to figure out was that we just paused shipping to Target. So knowing once we found out we were going to be on Shark Tank, we had a bunch of stuff stuck in the boat. We were like, we have no idea what's going on. And I think the first thing we did was we talked to anybody and everybody we knew who'd previously been on Shark Tank just to pick their brains. From a logistics standpoint, we built an entire new website. You have to have different flows and work through all of that. Everyone's biggest thing was customer support, which also I run customer support. So there's that. And they're like, make sure your team's ready and prepped. You're going to get thousands and thousands of messages. I'm like, me, myself, and I run customer support plus everything else. So I had to go and build an entire customer support. I basically, anyone who wanted to work part-time for that weekend at nights, I was like, let me teach you the customer support process. Be online. If you get tickets, you know how to do it. And if not, figure that out, because I was already traveling. I was like at a wedding that weekend and just all the perfect storms. I think it's just a lot of forward thinking and managing your risk. So knowing that, hey, if we weren't going to get the inventory in time, we're going to ship later. It's like, what would the customer need to know? And always think about the customer first. So we had prepped with all of our development that if we were going to sell out, or if we knew we weren't going to get, or if that shipment wasn't going to come in time, like shipping in 5 to 7 days, putting it in our customer support, putting it in the email when they get it. If they did order, sending them an email right afterwards saying, hey, we appreciate it. We're a small business. Just being really honest, transparent. Shark Tank is, you know, being crazy. Give us 5 to 7 extra days to ship out your product. And kind of, if you want a refund, and just be really accommodating. So I think the biggest thing of always thinking about your customer and like, what would your customer, or if you're a customer buying from a brand, what would you want to hear?
Yeah.
What expectation settings, like, that's fine. Or we push people to Target, being like, hey, we're going to ship in 5 to 7 days. It's available at Target. Go there. I think it, honestly, it comes down to having a lot of honest conversations, whether it's with your customers, whether it's with your partner. So we spend a ton of time talking to our warehouse, making sure they're prepped for the influx. Hey, if you are going to be prepped, how long do you think it'll take to get if we get 500 extra orders, 1,000 extra orders, 10,000 extra orders, and really playing through all those different scenarios, coming up with game plans of whatever situation may happen, and then being able to execute. And I think that's what saved us, or at least we didn't have any major issues in terms of that, is really making sure that we were planned as much as possible as we possibly could with the information that we'd gotten from, you know, colleagues or random people or anybody we met, any forum we were on. We're like, hey, you've been on Shark Tank, please call us. We're like, we need help kind of thing.
Got it. And there's a lot to unpack there. So I think one thing I'm curious about, just, we jumped to Shark Tank, but when you first started, were they already, must have had some sort of process established. And so you initially inherited their existing operations?
They're already on a 3PL. They kind of had some kind of, like, I mean, you obviously have a process of a customer ships. A customer buys on
orders
and all of that. So like
that
necessarily wasn't crazy. When I joined, we had just launched in CVS, so there's no process for how to manage wholesale as well as inventory for your e-com. So that I did not inherit and kind of had to figure that out.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of pros and cons of it just being me versus having an entire team, because at least with me, I know everything that's going on. So I'm not, there's no miscommunication, like someone else isn't talking to a vendor or a factory and I don't know about that. So in that sense, that's a pro. Also, handling customer support, as much as I don't love that, that's also a pro, because then I just have ears on the ground of like what's going on. So if all of a sudden a ton of customers are saying I'm not getting my order, I can automatically just go to the warehouse and it's a lot quicker of a time frame to figure it out, because I just know everything that's going on. Not scalable, but at least we are.
I was going to say,
it's helpful.
Yeah, your challenge is leverage. The quality of the information is very high. But then your challenge is leverage, and you know, when you, And so when you were transitioning or even like evaluating the current system, how did you go from, they were at like 0.1, it's not 0 to 1 because, you know, they had something, we'll call it 0.1 or 0.01. Like, how did you go and how did you, I guess, educate yourself? Was it through just like networking and talking to people? Were you on Google? Were you listening to podcasts? Like,
to me, it was a lot of networking. Like, I don't do super well listening to podcasts. Google will tell you every which way plus the opposite way. And everyone's telling you that's correct. Honestly, a lot of it came from Twitter. So knowing marketing Twitter, DTC Twitter is really big and powerful if you can follow the correct people and, you know, making sure you're reading the replies and asking questions. And then the other is a lot of network. So knowing that we had already known a lot of people that were in similar, not even the same business, but just like running DTC CPG brands and going through the same process, or our advisors or some of our investors, it's just really picking their brain and being like, this is where I am. How do you guys do it? It's more of like, how did you guys do it as a brand, and listening to a bunch of brands of what they're doing it and kind of making it my own. I also was very forward thinking, knowing I joined a startup, knowing that hopefully there's growth and we'll get to hiring and all of that. What would I want it to look like if I had 3 people and they're all managing different parts of that business? How do you keep that quality of information? Everything's still high. Mm-hmm. So thinking about that also at a very holistic level of what should it look like now? But then how can we get it to grow 3-5 people or whatever it may be? And how do you still keep that synergy?
Interesting. I mean, I guess looking back, is there anything that you wish you had done differently? Like, what were some of the biggest challenges and struggles?
I think because we are a startup, and I always like, you think, how do you do this with the least amount of cash possible? And for like that kind of thought process of just like, you're on a budget, you want to be conservative. I think I wish going forward, I would take the leap of maybe signing up for certain softwares or apps sooner rather than thinking like, let me just manage it super manually until I get to a point where I feel like that's unscalable.
Yeah.
I should find an app or a software or something to help manage that. I wish I'd done that maybe a little bit sooner.
I'm curious, like, could you give a list of like specific software that you wish you had jumped on? And like, what it would have accomplished.
Yeah, it honestly could be as simple as like Asana. So for us, it was very normal. And if we had contractors or whoever working on projects, it literally, it's like pieces of paper via email or going through Slack. So it's even like small things like that, is that now that we are like on Asana, we have a lot more contractors and working through some of those processes. It's, hey, what did we do last year? Or hey, what did we do before? I just spent so much time like going through emails or Slack messages or literally notebooks of like, how did I do it? Does that make sense or anything like that? So I wish I was a little bit, Asana is a really, I think, the easiest low hanging fruit of like, I wish I was a lot more organized to be able to scale further up in the, like in the beginning versus just kind of like, let me figure it out. Then I'll move forward and try to scale it that way. Even like certain plans related to, we use Freshdesk since it is just me and we don't get a ton of customer support. Like we get less than 1% of returns. So like, we don't have a ton of returns. I just jumped on a higher plan, even though it was just me. Like it can even be plan-based, not even necessarily app-based. I guess just spending the money forward just makes things a little bit easier on the back end to figure out what you did last year.
Yeah. I mean, is there any sort of like, what's your setup look like today? And I guess part of what I'd ask for is like, when you first started, how to like, of orders of magnitude, how much has volume changed? Right. Because now you're doing wholesale. Like, I mean, if you gave me like general numbers, like of how many orders or just like, so we have some sort of content.
Growth is probably in the hundreds. Like at least we've definitely doubled our e-com just looking last year to this year. That's before we even did Shark Tank. So I joined in 2020. So 2020, 2021, we, you know, doubled our growth in that sense.
Yeah.
Knowing that we haven't obviously finished 2022, but we've had Shark Tank, Target, Good Morning America. Those are the 3 big things off the top of my head. Like that magnitude itself is just going to probably like triple, quadruple the growth, knowing that Shark Tank, it's not even just one day. It was the entire weekend. We saw 4 best days of sales ever. Saturday was actually higher than Friday just because people stream it. Not a lot of people watch live TV anymore. So knowing that we had our 4 best sales day ever by hundreds of thousands of dollars, like you're just jumping that. So yeah, you're thinking 30x, 4x, probably since the time I started. It's been pretty crazy.
That's awesome. And so going back to, and you did walk us through ways that you guys, or that you had prepared for not running out of product? Or if you do run out of product, you know, what's the customer support outreach look like? What's the messaging? What's the communications of bear with us, waiting? You know, that's really, really smart. I guess the, you know, one of the things that came to mind too is you were talking about your Twitter list. I was trying to imagine, do you have like a list of people around operations on Twitter that someone listening or tuning in, like, they could go to and subscribe to see who are the people that you follow that are great.
No, but that's
the operations people.
No, that's a really good idea. And it's interesting, like, you think of operations, I think at least from an op side, you can take a lot. And I think this is where sort of a little bit of my background did take an effect, is like, you could still follow a software model to an extent, at least from like the organization, right? And knowing how you build a structure and that piece, that it's just a different kind of business from an operations, like me being having a lot of tech background. Like when you think about when you have a new client and you're onboarding a new client that way, how do you operationalize them? Like, what are the steps you think about your, I mean, a customer is a customer in either which way. You're selling to a customer, whether you're selling tangible product, whether you're selling software, whatever it may be, whether you're selling your service even. So it's like, I think that's very transferable. You're selling to your customer, they're giving you money. How do you make that journey? And then how do you manage that journey? And I think, at least for me, I was able to take all of that. And I think that's kind of why it helped, of having sort of, at the end of the day, you are selling to a customer or a consumer and they are purchasing. So it doesn't necessarily matter your role. Like, I still take a lot of inspiration from people on the marketing side or anything like that. I think CX people, like Eli Weiss, he's, you know, Stones Road, but he was at Olipop. Like, he's really interesting to listen to and get ideas, because even though that's more of customer support and the CX and the customer experience, that still will help you kind of tell what you need to do on the operations or the logistics side, knowing ultimately that's your end goal. And that should be everyone's end goal, regardless of what function you are within a company.
I'm curious, what type of stories or information that people were sharing with you was most helpful? Was it like general advice? Was it specific situations, like anecdotal?
It's very anecdotal. It's like, hey, this happened to me. So I'm part, there's a ton of CPG and DTC community groups. So like my favorite is the Get Repeat one by Kristen LaFrance on Slack. And that is nice because you have people from all different industries. So I actually talked a lot with, at least for Shark Tank specifically, with Cameron from Ouroboros. Ouroboros was on Shark Tank. Cameron runs, I feel like, everything, but it's like, hey, what's their experience of that specific event? Or we know Sarah from Curie. She was on Shark Tank probably 2 months before us. Even though she sells women's natural deodorant, it's like, hey, what was your experience? And she's, that also ties into with the rollout of Target and other things. So it's like everyone's situation is different because everyone's brand is different. Everyone's customer is different, but fundamentally it's all the same. And how you kind of either plan for that, a lot of it is having that expectation go forward, making sure like, hey, if you're picking a new 3PL, it's in 5 years from now, where do you envision your brand? Do you think you're going to be doing wholesale? So make sure you pick a 3PL that can handle wholesale. Are you going to maybe be on Amazon? Make sure your wholesale can send to Amazon. DTC obviously is probably most likely where people start. Bread and butter, they can send direct to their consumer, but also thinking more forward thinking to help build your tech stack so that you don't have to go and reiterate again. Or hopefully your warehouse already has experience sending to wholesale, so then they can also help you and kind of leveraging all of your existing relationships, whether they're vendors or colleagues or anybody else.
Yeah. And I guess of the things that you kind of, that come top of mind, because you mentioned a few of them, which are basically, I would interpret, I think of that, I don't think it's attributable to Amazon, but I always think of its decisions as they're either one-way or two-way doors. Like, can you reverse the decision? They're either reversible or irreversible decisions. Right. I guess I'm curious, of the things in your head that are the most important, what are the ones that are irreversible? Is it the, whether or not your 3PL can support? I'll let you answer this. I'll stop myself.
I think anything that's irreversible is honestly product-based. So like packaging, getting your product set up, I think that's the irreversible, or that just costs so much freaking money and overhead for you to screw up and you have to move forward and you're stuck with old inventory. So I think that part is anything, assuming your product's all good and that part's figured out, I don't think anything is irreversible. Reversible, which I think is the nice safety net of that. Hey, you can, like what I talked about at the very beginning of like some point, you just have to pull the plug and give it a try. I don't think there anything is. I mean, it's going to cost you time and money. Like moving all your inventory from one 3PL to another is a pain, but it's doable. And a lot of people do it and it's not the end of the world. I think it's like when you move a house, it sucks and it's a pain and it's going to cost you money and time, but like people move all the time.
Yes.
So I don't know if there anything is irreversible. I think it's more about how do you manage the risk and do it either in a small way or in a way the timing is not going to affect anything big, or just you talk to enough people. So like, let's say, for example, you are moving to a new 3PL. Who do you know within your network that actually uses that 3PL? Get their honest feedback, get their honest review. I would do that for anything you sign up for and spend money on, whether it's an agency, whether it's a software. We've been doing that a ton. We're building out a loyalty program. So what are the different loyalty softwares out there? Who do we know that have been on these loyalties? Who are the companies that we love their loyalty program and either want to like copy or take? Are they all using the same software that you can just jump on board? So I think it's a lot of doing your homework, due diligence, whether it's Googling it. I think talking to people and getting reviews is honestly the best situation, because anybody's going to have a nice website and tell you all the nice buzzwords and overpromise all the things. But what's the reality of that getting it done? Or if they do have hiccups, nobody's perfect. Can you manage that? Or how do you deal with that?
Yeah. And so I'm curious. So for in your mind, at least in terms of like standard operating procedures, is operations separate from support? Or
yes,
I know it's you, right?
Yeah.
It's you. Yeah. And so I'm curious, how have you gone about even like operationalizing those? Like, do you have like SOPs for everything?
That's a great question. That's something I'm really working on for the end of 2022 into 2023, is putting a little bit more procedure behind it. I definitely have like my procedure steps, which I've been able to like document. And really, if I got hit by a bus today, someone could literally pick it up and at least know how to do it from that sense. I don't think I've really spent that time of building SOPs if like we had a team of 10, just because I know that's not close. So it's in a weird in between. But I think the first step you should do, one, I needed to do it because I'm doing so many things, is really write down my steps and the procedure just to keep myself organized. And that's how I just am as a person, to keep myself organized. I write it all down, type it all up, or like so I can reference it later. It's like a really good example is pulling VAT tax. So I got to pull all of our orders for VAT tax to be able to send, since we shipped to the UK, and like all that information. But I have it written down on a piece of paper, but then I eventually moved it to Asana. But like from a procedure standpoint of like, these are the steps you need to do it. This is why, this is your outcome. This is when, here are your results. And then I have a calendar invite. So like at the end of every quarter, hey, don't forget to fill out the VAT tax and make sure that gets sent to the appropriate person. So I think if you are a single person or it's all in one hand, it's really important to at least record your steps and the procedures and why, and the motto of like, if you get hit by a bus today, can someone pick it up and at least do the tactical steps? And then I think that'll be a lot easier, that once we do get bigger, I need to turn them more into SOPs and all of that. Half of that's already done. That's a lot of it, is really recording those tactical steps.
Yeah. And I'm curious of, would you recommend your 3PL, or what are there specific services and third parties you're using today where you're like, you were telling, if a friend asked you, hey, I'm doing this, and maybe it's based off of the scale of their business. Although part of what you said too is you wish you'd invested, maybe not on the 3PL side, but well, maybe so actually, given what you're talking about going wholesale versus staying direct to consumer.
It's interesting you say that. We're trying to figure out, in all honesty, if we are going to stay with our 3PL, but that's just more based off of a few. It's maybe not necessarily the work that they're going. Our 3PL just got bought by a bigger company, so we're just trying to figure out all of that movement since they
got bought.
So it's less about the 3PL and more about the situation of that piece when that happens. So from a 3PL standpoint, maybe just ask me in 6 months, depending on how them getting acquired and then moving systems, and that's clunky for everybody. So I don't think that's a fair thing in that sense. We just moved to Loop Returns from a return standpoint, which for us, so we were on Return Magic. They had Sunset. We purposely never really looked for a huge or really integrated return portal, because we have less than 1% of returns.
You're saying you have like less one. Yeah.
But we decided to move to Loop Returns, even though there were some more in between ones, because one, what's great about Loop is they can, if you sell kits or bundles, you can return a single item within a kit or bundle in a very easy way that's not manual, because I was doing it manually. So again, when we were evaluating a new return system, I looked at what our most common customer support complaints were, or where I spent most of my time answering customer support tickets, of like, how can I solve some of these to get that reduced down? One was the return piece of not being able to return a piece from the bundle without returning the entire bundle, or us not refunding them the entire bundle, and how you work through that. And then thinking about the future, like if returns get bigger or we expand our business, so then we have things that are, you know, what if we sold a lot more apparel and that got returned more? Like thinking about that, mm-hmm. or that can be managed. We'll want to look at the analytics more. If that ever becomes bigger, we sell a lot more, you'll just get more returns naturally through that. What look like from an analytical standpoint? Is it more self-service? So it's less about us manually handling them. How do we start to offload that? So I think really looking at what you're currently doing today, are there any customer problems to solve? And then looking at down the road, even 6 to 2 years from now, where do you think, or where would you want your business to be? Are you equipped to really handle that?
Yeah. And I'm curious, and since I know you guys, I don't know what percentage of your business is subscription, but you are both, you know, transactional as well as subscription. How do you think about inventory management, and how have you dealt with inventory management, especially around like Shark Tank, where you have existing commitments to subscribers, but then you also have the ability to sell through the storefront?
Yeah.
How did you approach that?
So our subscription, I think, is maybe like 20% of our business. So it's still pretty much on the small side. And honestly, it was a lot of just backcasting and just really drilling down of, like, to your example with subscriptions. Let me pull, everybody's on subscription. What products are they on subscription? Are those products that we know, are they best sellers? So we know we're already going to overcompensate for product. Is it product that maybe we didn't think we were going to have? And it was a lot of just manually looking at it. Honestly, I have an easier way than just manually looking at it, seeing what lined up. Did we think we had any product in danger? Whether it's from selling out for Shark Tank or anything big, we know what we're shipping to wholesale, because that's pretty a little bit easier to predict what that will look like in at least month. Do I think there's anything in danger? Let's just hold it back and make sure those orders got fulfilled. At least with Shark Tank, we knew that the spike was really just that first week. So we really only had to protect yourself for, you know, 2 weeks of like whose subscriptions were up within those 2 weeks. What did that look like? Can we that way? And then we were fortunately fine, so we didn't have to have any.
How did you go about, like, were you doing Excel models? Like, were you using software? Yeah. Like,
I'm in a Google Sheet. I'm an Excel sheet. I'm just thinking of, oh, here's my monthly sales of, I took December, knowing that December or whatever your month is, my highest month, let me times it by 5. Let me look, what did that look like? Let me times it by 10. What that look like? Let me look at 15X, like playing all those different scenarios. I did it by hand. Again, maybe definitely not the fastest way, but like that also made sense for my brain and how to look at it. And because it was just me and our CEO, and him and I were just really looking at it. I didn't have a board to talk to. I didn't have an executive team. People. It's just very much like, here's how I did my math. Let's, like, pen and paper is essentially how I did it.
And is that still how you do inventory forecasting today?
Yeah, it works for me. And I think it's also, again, because it's just me and we have one DC. So all of our inventory also comes from the same location. So there's just less to manage that. It's like, I have a report. It tells me all of my inventory of what it is. And then I just look, I already know what I'm going to send to our wholesalers, you know, within the next month. I can predict that. And that hustle, you have a lot more leverage to say like, no, you're gonna have to wait or anything like that. So at least on that side, at least some of our smaller ones, I had that leverage. And then I look at it, you know, monthly.
And do you guys do any drops, is maybe the wrong term, but have you done anything around, like, we'll call it short-term special products around like the holidays, for example, that you only would offer around the holidays?
Yeah.
Or specific, So I'm just thinking about how you go about approaching forecasting for that, making sure that you have enough of it, but not too much.
It's, again, I think it's that expectation setting of, if you are doing a limited drop, you know, for your marketing team, a lot of that is like, hey, we only have a few, make sure you get it super quick. It sells out once it's gone. So it's, what are you leveraging from a marketing perspective? Helps kind of take that inventory piece. I don't think there's anything wrong with being like, hey, we sold out, or hey, this moves super fast. Make sure you're signed up for our emails and our text messages so you're first to know next time. Like, there's so many ways to be able to leverage those situations that if you do sell out, like, oops, sorry, we sold out. Use that in marketing PR. They sold out in 10 minutes and they can't get it back. Or, you know, there's a 15,000 person wait list. And like, all those stats probably came up because there's a situation where you're like, oops, crap, that probably didn't happen, but how do you leverage that go forward? It is what it is, unfortunately. Like, you can't lose sleep over it because there's some, a lot of it's out of your control. You can't get your boat to move faster. You can't pay enough money, like, to pull it out of customs. Like, there's so many things that are out of your control. People always ask me, it's like, you're doing all these things, how do you sleep at night? And I'm like, at the end of the day, if I know I'm trying to risk management and try to go forward as much as possible and things happen, there's nothing I can do. So, like, why am I going to lose sleep on something that, like, what am I going to do? Fly overseas and charter my own plane and ship all my product back?
Elon Musk probably would.
People have done that. And if I had the financial means, I would 100% do that, but I don't and I can't. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. So you kind of have to separate yourself and that it is a business. It's out of your control and it's only you and one person. And
you're trying to slide into the DMs of someone on the boat, text them, be like, can you start like mailing us? So I cannot confirm or deny.
Definitely have slid into people's DMs being like, hey, can you help in my personal life and my professional life? And some, hey, the worst case is no, and you're in the exact same spot that you are. So I'm definitely not above sliding into someone's LinkedIn.
No, I love that. Like,
hey, can you help?
Like, that's awesome. Like, are there any specific stories over the last like couple of years that stand out as a shit show? Like, is there anything when you look back and like, hopefully it turned out well. Maybe it didn't, but I'm curious if like a lesson learned.
I think us from an inventory perspective, us getting the target was a little bit of an oopsies. We got really lucky. And so we were launching in March for Target. You have to start shipping product come December. So it hits the warehouse in June to give 2 months. As everyone is fully aware right now with the current situation, DCs are back up, trucks aren't just showing up. There's just, everyone's understaffed, nobody's working. Everything's just like a hot mess. So for that, you kind of have to plan even further out. And I think our mistake was, I had reached out to our 3PL and our EDI back in October, like, hey, we're going to ship to Target. Let's make sure this is all set up and everything's good to go. I just assumed it would have been taken care of. You have the holidays, you have a lot of other stuff, and wasn't as forward of following up as I should have been to really make sure that, just because they have worked together so well and they've worked and done stuff for some of our other wholesale partners, that like that just would have been taken care of. It wasn't. The reason why doesn't actually even matter. So we're kind of in a situation where we had tried to start shipping in December and they couldn't, because they couldn't get the ASNs to talk and with to feed and the packing list, like none of that was fully connecting. So it was like what my warehouse was packing, they couldn't send the ASNs to Target. So then Target would have no way of receiving it and tracking it and all of that. Oh, again, a lot of it's just being transparent of like, hey, they weren't connected in time for whatever X, Y, and Z reasons. Can you Target? Can we ship some now? How do we manually do some things? We did a lot of manual work of actually just creating ASNs, like, so thankful that we had a really nice partner in our 3PL to really work through, like that manager really helping to make sure we're setting up manual ASNs. We're doing it manual on the warehouse side. Like, I'm submitting orders in manually versus it just reading it through the EDI to make sure we're doing it in chunks. So there's a lot of, lots of spreadsheets, a lot of different colors and coordinations of like, this chunk is going, a lot of help with our partners at Target, rewriting POs, making ship dates change. So there's a lot, we luckily were fine. We're only late, you know, good, like, hey, we're a small brand. This is the first time we're shipping to Target. There's a lot of issues. Can you just be a great partner and help us out? Really kinks working through that of making sure that got to DC on time. Everything ended up being on time because there was such a bigger window. And we started this in December for January. So we got lucky, but sometimes you kind of just have to fall on your sword and be like, hey, I totally screwed up. We're a small brand. You know, we're trying the best we can. Can you help us out? And we do it in a nice and respectful way, or like, I will do the manual part. Can you just show me how? Like, really, I don't know. It's just, how do you work with a team and not put blame on people and being like, let me help you out. I'll do this manual work if you do this manual work. And like, how do we come together? It really worked out, which was nice, but it was a lot. There's just a lot of things.
I'm curious. Is there anything that I haven't asked you or that hasn't come up in this conversation that you wish had come up? Or anything that I should have asked you that I haven't?
I think it's interesting, right? Like, you're talking to companies with co-founders, or they have small teams, or they're looking to expand their team. And I think, especially with like the operations and logistics, I think they don't get talked about a lot from a role. Like, you just hear lots about marketing, CMOs, growth, all of that, but you forget the behind the scenes and that it's not as simple. And it's also not necessarily maybe a role that either people like are looking for either, or know that they have it in. I think being able to find somebody who's just really good at figuring out and problem solving, I think will get you a lot further than maybe even somebody who happens to have a supply chain role, especially with DTC and 3PLs and retailers and wholesalers. That is just one, it's ever changing. It's so dependent on your department. What are you selling? Are you in food, like food and all of that, cold storage? I wouldn't even touch that because that's just so out of my element and just so different. But being able to find someone with that exact job description, like, oh, I know someone who can work with retailers and 3PL that does cold storage for food. Like, that's finding diamond in rough versus can you find someone who's really good at problem solving, really good at just figuring shit out and making sure if you tell them the train is at A and it needs to get to B, they'll somehow get there, especially when you're really small. I would hire someone like that any day because you just know whatever gets thrown, or all of a sudden you might be on Shark Tank, or all of a sudden you might be on QVC, or you have a really big sale, or some big TV show or podcast or celebrity talks about you. And then you're like, oh crap. Like, if you're a small business, you probably have not had that situation happen to you. So is there someone who can just really roll with the punches and be like, all right, we got to figure it out. This is a situation we have at hand. I think that will get you real further than maybe hiring someone who's like very specific for that role.
Got it. And it's funny trying to hire, and what looking for is, you know, oftentimes you're looking for what role did someone have before, but oftentimes it's the looking for other things or other behavioral things. Just like in your own history. Yeah, you had absolutely no, I don't know what someone looking at your background could have, what they were able to glean based off of your background being like, oh yeah, she could take on operations. Obviously there were things, I don't know, or maybe they got really lucky.
I think it has to do with the fact that one of our co-founders, him and I, so he was my sales counterpart when I was in account management. So like we just worked all together for years. So I think it's either, can you find someone that has a recommendation from someone that has already worked? So you can talk about more about their work ethic and how they work, like their previous roles, or at least for us, our head of growth, we had hired, none of us knew him, but it's like how you talk. We did a ton of video chats, situations. Do you do role playing? Like, hey, what's your background? What have you solved for? And like, what have you done in your previous role? Even though head of growth at software is very vague. And how do you get that to be CPG, DTC? But like, what are those key things you necessarily know? Like, you know how to grow a business. So can you grow a different business, or can you grow any business? Like anyone who's a head of growth, they should be able to grow anything, right? I think for me, that was an old merchant saying that if you're a good merchant or a good buyer, you can merchant and buy anything. It doesn't matter if you are a woman in women's clothing, you're a man in women's clothing, you're a woman in men's clothing, or whatever it may be. You don't play sports or anything like that. But if you know how to do your job or how to problem solve for what you're solving for, you can definitely do it.
Yeah, I know one sort of hack, you can call it a hack, that we had picked up at my previous company, Cardo. We looked for customer support, people who had worked at Apple, at like the Genius Bar. So looking for people who worked retail, but for Apple specifically, because Apple's emphasis around customer experience and customer support. And so even when I'm thinking about hiring, part of what I look at is, you can't just hire someone based off, oh, they worked at Google. And, you know, oftentimes someone who works well in an organization of whatever scale doesn't mean they'd be a good match for a startup, but you can look for what are certain things or filters that those companies use. So that's interesting. So are there any specific heuristics that you would look at around operations?
That's funny you talk about Apple, because our co-founder, he used to work at Apple in the retail store, and actually he got one of the Apple's stores up and running. So like, that's actually really funny. That is examples. I think, honestly, people on the ground from, I think when I think about operations, obviously having an ops background, that of course that makes sense. But like, if you even look at like my background or something like that, I think people who are customer centric, to your point of customer success, I think that's someone I would look for, because more account management maybe than a customer success. I'd rather have someone who has a few big clients and that are in really deep in like high touch points versus more customer support, low touch, that, because that means is they're so intimately involved with their book of business, whether they have three or four clients, they're super intimately involved. That means they're probably more likely super good at problem solving as a partnership. So when you think about operations and logistics, everything that ties back to, it's like, how is this getting to the customer? And is the customer going to have a great experience? So as long as you keep that in mind of a problem solving in that standpoint, then that's someone I look for, is more problem solving, customer-centric, really, you know, high touch from a customer support account management standpoint.
That makes a lot of sense. And I'm going to say, so two things, one of which is to commit to creating a Twitter list of people to follow in operations,
okay,
even if they're not in actually operations. This is not me to force you, but you did seem excited when I mentioned it, when I asked if you already had one.
No, yeah, it sounds a good idea. Yeah, no, I think there's a lot on Twitter. And I think what's great about Twitter is when you follow the right people, it's like you just hear things or even things you didn't think about. Or, you know, I would also really get involved in Slack community groups or however community groups, whether it's Slack or anything else, because that is where you'll really learn a lot of. You'll just hear even when so people are having like, oh, that's a really great idea, I never thought about that. Or, you know, hey, I need help. Or, hey, can you make recommendations? Like, I think for us, I just actually had a friend. So we're right now doing a Target scavenger hunt. So if you're a customer, you find us at Target, take a picture of our shelf, send it over, you know, fill out a Google form, send it out. We blasted it on TikTok. We'll give you a $10 Target gift card if you're the first location, or we'll send you some Strix goodies. I was like, hey, this is what we're doing. And then I just had a friend being like, hey, would love to do that for our brand. Like, let me pick your brain about the operations behind it, or like however it's set up. It's like, I think getting involved, networking, and really being involved as much as you can with other people, that's how it's going to move your business forward. Entrepreneurship is lonely, right? Like when you only have a couple of coworkers, or if it's just yourself, like you're just going to make yourself crazy going over the same things, or you need people to bounce it off. And why not have an entire community where people have already done it, or they have experience, or they know what not to do? Super helpful.
Yeah, I would say that the signal to noise ratio is the challenge I have in a lot of the communities where I'm in like seven, right? Either focused around like CPG or, you know, specifically SaaS, but then also on the engineering side, and part of, I feel like at least one Laravel community where similar, like when I do engage, it's extremely valuable and I can find stuff. And, but the amount of noise, like when I go back in, it's like 5,000 notifications. And so I'm curious, and maybe in your case, you focused on, you mentioned repeats community, you know, is it something that you focus more on just going through and seeing what people have written? Or are you looking, are you searching for archives around topics? Are you just posting out what you need?
I'll do both. If I have a question, I'll just do a quick search just to see if anyone has like brought that topic up or anything like that. I also know the community manager pretty well, so I have no problem just slacking her and be like, hey, has anyone brought this up? Or can you think of anybody who like might be good for this topic? Or you just reach out, because worst case, you don't get an answer and that puts you in the same boat. I quickly will peruse it maybe like once a day, at least of like at the end of the day, people going on. It's almost like to me, like reading a newsletter or catching up on my Twitter feed. It's like, oh, what are people talking about today? If it's interesting, I'll read the replies or dig into it. If it's not, I'm like, oh, that's cool. So kind of use it almost like a source of information. And if you think about it that way versus trying to keep up every notification or anything like that, like that's obviously super overwhelming and going to consume your entire day. But if you can treat it like Twitter or social media feed, when you're involved, when you need it to be, or whatever it may be, and if it's not, just doesn't exist in search, then I think it'll be okay.
Cool. No, it makes sense. I think there's probably a business idea in there around basically identifying, being able to pull out the most useful or most commented on or most engaged posts within a Slack group.
I'm sure there is. Or there should be.
Yeah. One last question. Say, do you have a big ask? Like, what's one way that people could, well, what's something that would change your job, change your company, change your life? Like, for anyone listening and tuning in, if you could put it out there, what would it be?
I would love to manifest just a bigger cash flow. I think, like, if we're being realistic, I think managing a bigger cash flow of being able to have that source, whether you need it or anything like that, because you can do a lot of things with money. Obviously, money doesn't cure happiness, but it could definitely help. So I think having a bigger cash flow would be probably my one ask, which there it is. Let me go buy a lottery ticket for the $3 billion or whatever it is right now. But yeah, I think that, and I think networking, I think that's always a big thing, like happy to network, happy to chat, always, you know, willing to have a coffee chat or conversation, regardless if it is relevant or not, because you'll never know when you come back for something else, or it comes around, or someone knows someone. So I think money and networking, I think, would be my two big asks if I had to put some out there.
Awesome. Any specific areas of networking, like people who do a certain thing that'd be most valuable to you?
No, because I think you can learn a lot, especially people not in your same industry, sector, job, or anything like that. I think as long as you have an open mind, you can learn a lot. And how do you translate that? And I think that's where some of the best ideas or some of the out of the box things of like, how do we move forward? How do we not do what anyone else is doing? Also, I think also in life of just hearing people's experiences and how they got there, I think that really can stem a lot of creativity. Take it any and all.
Awesome. Well, Elizabeth, thanks so much for being part of the office hours. Where can people find you?
You can find me on LinkedIn. Shoot me an email. It's probably honestly the best ways. I am on Twitter and I'm going to build a Twitter list and maybe my Twitter will become
a thing. I was going to say, and we'll post the, we'll create a link with, we'll package a link with, to the Twitter list.
Yeah, but honestly,
shoot me. As well as your stuff. Yeah.
LinkedIn, probably the easiest ways to get a hold of me, but yeah, happy to network and chat. This was a pleasure. Awesome. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much.
Thanks, Ben. Bye.